From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it. And I'm John Wells.
And I'm Lauren Strawn, sitting in for Lynn Ware Peake today. In recent scientific research, the use of psychedelics to conquer difficult-to-treat conditions such as PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, addiction, and anxiety has emerged as a promising treatment. A symposium in Salt Lake tomorrow and Saturday focuses on the latest in brain science and the research on the use of psychedelics. The symposium is hosted by SCPTR, which is the Salt City Psychedelic Therapy and Research, pronounced SCEPTR. We'll learn from national experts about the risks and benefits of psychedelics such as cannabis, MDMA, LSD, psilocybin, ketamine, and ayahuasca for mental health and personal growth, and the powerful role this work is playing in policy, law, and culture. Joining us by phone is Dr. Parth Gandhi, a neuropsychologist who, along with colleagues and professionals in the neuroscience community, present the Intermountain Psychedelic Science and Therapy Symposium. Parth Gandhi, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. Thank you.
Wonderful.
We're excited to talk about what's going on.
Well, great. Why don't you give us a little introduction to this symposium and what it's all about?
Well, absolutely. Thank you. So SCEPTR, SCPTR, Salt City Psychedelic Therapy and Research, was a vision that we created essentially around studying psychedelic medicine. Legally, most psychedelic medicines are now Schedule I and illegal to use, and you know they become recreational drugs. But there are, for the last two decades, a lot of studies going on, and increasingly so now, over the last, say, two or three years, we anticipate having clinical trials for psilocybin, studying psilocybin against depression, against eating disorders, against addiction, studying MDMA, using MDMA-assisted psychotherapy to treat disorders such as PTSD. Our three mission goal is general education, public education, which hopefully will lead to legislation and decriminalization of these drugs. Second is harm reduction, helping people understand, you know, how to move through these experiences, because most people at this point are using the medicines without supervision or a lot of education. And third is raising public resources, funds to do psychedelic assisted psychotherapy in clinical trials. It's a very, very expensive science, and you know the study process is long, and that's kind of what we're doing with the conference. So getting back to your conference, the Intermountain Psychedelic Symposium serves in all three of those purposes. We are bringing some very large names here from across the country, scientists that have been studying this for, in some cases, their entire life. Our keynote speaker, Jim Fadiman, has become a really good friend, and we were speaking several months ago about him coming to do just a couple of hours for professionals, and that blew up into a three-day long weekend of speakers and trainings that starts tomorrow, Friday, 7 p.m. at the Salt Lake City Public Library. Dr. Fadiman is giving a talk. Unfortunately, that is now sold out. But on Saturday, the Intermountain Psychedelic Symposium, it starts at 9 a.m. and goes till 5 p.m. We have 10 different speakers. Dr. Fadiman will be keynoting it. We have, and he's going to be mostly speaking about the kind of the renaissance of microdosing. And then Dr. Phil Wolfson from California will be coming in and to talk about ketamine and setting the container for psychedelic psychotherapy. And then we have therapist panels, psychiatrist panels. It's just a full day. And then Sunday, the major organization that's studying psychedelics, MAPS.org, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Sciences, will be doing a harm reduction training, a peer support training. That's actually kind of the registration process is separate from us, but we're promoting it as what we're doing. And actually a really fun event on Saturday night at 7 p.m. at the Salt Lake Event Center downtown, there's going to be an after party just to kind of let loose and mingle with people that are kind of in the space, because one of the major things that we wanted to do with this conference is bring the network of people that are already thinking about it, doing it, wanting to talk about it, bring those people together. We just found that that discussion wasn't public and it wasn't being had, and we wanted to bring an opportunity for people to come together and meet other people.
Well,
and
it sounds like
we've got... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sounds like a really comprehensive schedule. And if you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're speaking with neuropsychologist Dr. Parth Gandhi about the inaugural Intermountain Psychedelic Science and Therapy Symposium. We're talking all about the symposium, but if you want to just Google Intermountain Psychedelic Science and Therapy Symposium, you'll be able to get all of the particulars. Parth, I wanted to ask you, the history of psychedelics in the United States the last 70 years has been bizarre. I mean, first we had the government conducting LSD studies, and some people didn't even know that they were taking LSD, and that was just crazy. And then, of course, we had the 60s, and I grew up in the 60s, and I mean, the 60s were bizarre without psychedelics, and then with psychedelics, you know, who knows. And now we have this controlled, responsible studies that are showing all sorts of benefits. Can you talk about some of the benefits that that we have discovered so far?
Oh, absolutely. And the funny thing is, even going back to the 50s and 60s, so LSD was synthesized by a biochemist, pharmacologist, and it was kind of discovered on accident because he was trying to synthesize, magic mushrooms, the kind of the medicine that came out of magic mushrooms, and he created what we now know as LSD-25, which is a substance. And it actually, in the 50s and 60s, there was nearly 10,000 studies, clinical studies. It was being studied very aggressively. But then at the same time, there was this counterculture based on what the experience was, the recreational side, that really scared government and religion. And so there was a lot of propaganda, put out really against LSD and mushrooms. And certainly some drugs are very negative and very harmful. But even those studies, treating addiction very, very well, depression very well, and now our studies are for treatment-resistant depression, we can, effectively treat with a macrodose of large dose of psilocybin, which is, what's in the magic mushrooms, at almost an 80% effectiveness rate. And so the research, the science is so profound. And, the one thing is, if we could take the word psychedelic out of, of what we're doing, and I presented this idea of we have this new medicine from pharmaceutical companies or plant medicine that could treat addiction or depression or PTSD at this level, at a level that no other medicine can sort of help with, then, people would really turn their heads and say, what's going on? It would change the pharmaceutical industry. But the thing is that it has to be done with therapy. It has to be done in a container, in an integrated model. It can't just be given like many other medicines are tried, like SSRIs. It has to be, MDMA-assisted psychotherapy, psilocybin-assisted psychotherapy. We do ketamine-assisted psychotherapy because what it does is it alters the brain and opens it expansively for change, for growth, for development. The ideas of neuroplasticity and neurogenesis, we're allowing the brain to change, but change to what? If it doesn't have change to, the opportunity to change into something in an integrated model, then it will revert back to the old habits. So it's a beautiful process.
So can you explain the difference between microdosing and just regular dosing, or whatever the opposite of microdosing is?
Well, yeah. So microdosing is essentially a sub-perceptual amount. So it's taking the medicine. It has a neurologic effect, but you don't feel effect. You don't get a visual change. You don't experience any psychedelics or psycholytic experience. But it does have a positive effect on the brain. We know that the medicine helps, LSD and psilocybin helps with the default mode network in the brain, and it kind of shuts off the ruminating that happens in either depression or anxiety. It also helps with axonal connection. It strengthens axonal connection, which is really the opposite of depression, and it helps with creativity, allowing you to do more. And think about the processing in therapy. You know, a lot of microdosing has started and come out of Palo Alto, the West Coast. Like, I think a lot of Palo Alto engineers have been reported to, you know, to microdose LSD, which helps them with creativity. That has now turned into a lot of microdosing with psilocybin. So in terms of amount, you know, if, you know, let's say, you know, a recreational user were using 3 to 4 grams of mushrooms, it might be 10% of that. It might be 350 milligrams that allows them this experience. And, you know, Jim Fadiman, that's the keynote speaker, he 10 years ago came up with the idea that microdosing every third day would allow a person this neurogenesis. And there's been a lot written on that now. Another mycologist, you know, probably Paul Stamets, he suggested a different schedule, 4 days on and 3 days off. So all of that is sort of experimental and what we want to do here in clinical trials.
Dr. Gandhi, in addition to talking about psilocybin, you're also talking about ketamine. And recent news is that this may be a game changer for people that have suffered from depression and have not been able to be pulled out of that by any other medications or therapies. Can you talk about the promise of ketamine? I don't want to blow it out of proportion, but I understand that this may be a game changer.
You know, it is for a lot of people. A lot of people with treatment-resistant depression, it really pulls them out of that, you know, ruminating experience, that depressive experience. It has shown to be, you know, a very positive experience for both depression and anxiety. It also is being used to treat PTSD, obsessive compulsive disorder. it was recently announced by the FDA that it is an emergency treatment for suicide in the emergency room. So think about that. We don't have anything like that. You know, you go and you're suicidal and you're in crisis and you can get a ketamine treatment that immediately pulls you out of that depressive state and allows you to function in a way that you can now think about the cause of the depression.
So I'm going to just go off on a little tangent here for a minute. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the famous TV show, The X-Files. Have you heard of
I
it?
Do.
So there was an episode, I remember, where there was a crazy animal that was attacking people's pets and stuff, and it turned out that it was a guy taking ketamine, and then he thought he turned into this, you know, rabid animal. That's all I've ever heard about with ketamine is that you use it to put elephants under sedation and that it causes crazy effects. I mean, how is ketamine going to prevent suicide when at the same time it's causing this guy to behave like he's an animal?
That is a great experiment, question. So ketamine was originally used as an anesthetic and then an analgesic. So it was used for animals first and then in humans to sedate them. And it's used now currently, you know, widespread in surgery. It's used in sort of, field time battle, you know, by medics, you know, because it's a very stable anesthetic. And over time, they've noticed, you know, as most clinical things happen, they noticed there was another effect. In a lower dose, it can create this psycholytic experience or a psychedelic experience. And so instead of putting someone completely to sleep and it allowing them to sort of take away pain, if you give it in a lower dose, it creates sort of a visual and psychedelic experience. It allows the person to think about their unconsciousness. And that's how we talk about it. It raises the unconsciousness into awareness, kind of like a dreamlike state, and it lubricates therapy. So often we pair psychotherapy with it. We want to do integrative therapy because when they're raising that unconsciousness, they now have a lot of information they can use that they should process with somebody that's trained.
Dr. Gandhi, this is not based in science. This is more just anecdotal information that I've heard over the last several weeks, and I just wanted to ask you about this. I was told that a large percentage of people that are in psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy, where they might be in a controlled environment using psilocybin, have stated that that experience is one of the top five experiences in their life. Now, is there science behind that, or is this just anecdotal observation?
Unfortunately, a lot of that is very anecdotal. There are studies, you know, for cancer, terminal cancer patients. There's a study from Johns Hopkins, that it was given to ministers and pastors, and it was a spiritual experience, and they had that sort of mystical experience that changed their life. It is, unfortunately, very anecdotal, but there are thousands of experiences, you know, in terms of anecdotal. So we can use it for qualitative research and pull information, and, you know, but to do what is required now to get through the FDA, double-blind, placebo-controlled studies, doing it in a quantitative way, it's a whole different process. And so we can count on it, you know, especially LSD is such a strong and powerful medicine. There's actually an article in Vanity Fair about 10 years ago. It's called Carrying the Sky with Diamonds. And a lot, it goes on these anecdotes and tangents about, people that talk 50 years later about the most significant experience of their life using LSD therapy.
Fascinating. So, you know, I thinking about the brain a little bit, and you talked about axonal strengthening and changes in structure. So do these classes of drugs cause permanent changes in the brain? Like, do you get treatment once and then you're done because now your brain structure has changed? Or how does it really work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the medicine, so when I talk about the medicines as a whole, it could be a lot of different things. It could be ketamine, which is currently a legal medicine to be used. It's a synthetic, obviously. Psilocybin, ayahuasca, MDMA, LSD. There are a lot of different things. They have, you know, different responses in the brain. When we talk about learning and changes in the brain, we're talking about, you know, axonal connection and, you know, development in the gray matter and how a function, our brain functions well together. Our brains, you know, as adults, we have ruts in the road. I mean, that's sort of the metaphor that's being used. We have a way that we sort of do things and respond to our environment. We respond to trauma. We invite depression in through certain ruminative processes. Well, the medicines typically allow you to now gather more information, integrate that same information in a different way. If we can change or shut off the default mode network and stop ruminating, we may be able to create a new way of how to respond. And all of that, to me, neurologically, means change in the brain, how we are using information and adapting to that information differently.
Dr. Parth Gandhi, you are a neuropsychologist. Is that correct?
That's correct.
We had someone on the program on Cool Science Radio about a couple of months ago, who talked about panpsychism, which is, I guess the best way to describe it, and maybe you could describe it probably a lot better, but consciousness is, we have an experience as humans, but consciousness, a subset of consciousness or some kind of consciousness is also in the plant kingdom and is found throughout the entire universe. Are you familiar with panpsychism? And if you are, what do you think of that?
I can't speak to it intelligently. It's maybe sort of out of my realm. I actually just Googled it. It says, a philosophy of mind, panpsychism is a view that mind or mind-like aspect of it is fundamental and ubiquitous. I am who I am. I believe in that process. And I think, for different people, it has different experiences. As a psychologist, I'm a neuropsychologist and trained in a lot of the brain behavior relationship stuff, but also practice transpersonal psychology and have a spiritual component to my practice. And this panpsychism is something that really speaks to me just glancing at it. So I'll have to do my own research.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious, you know, does consciousness rise from matter? What is consciousness? And this is a tricky question, are we doing enough to actually study consciousness?
That is great. I think more and more, you know, even the experiences of people now, the awakenedness of societies, you know, it's one of our slogans, actually, if you go to our website, it's time to wake up. And I think that's happening in society, that people are rising in consciousness. People love reading about self-growth and development. Pam Harris and Jordan Peterson, there's so many people talking about it. Joe Rogan, Tim Ferriss, there's so many people out there listening and wanting to wake up. Well, and that's, we just sit right in the middle of that.
Yeah, and one of the books I read recently that I found so fascinating was Michael Pollan's book. Mm-hmm. About the use of psychedelics, and you know, in the past he's written more about food and human evolution and things like that. But this, I'm trying to remember the name of the title of his most recent book. But his experience was really outstanding. Has that, because he is such a popular author, has the publication of that book helped your you know, bringing awareness, and what you mentioned was the first goal of your symposium?
100%. Michael Pollan, his book, How to Change Your Mind, came out 2 years ago, and it has created a revolution in the way we think about these medicines. And it's just this teachable moment of psychedelics aren't these things to be feared. Psychedelics, by definition, the definition means meaning-making. It's the opportunity to raise into consciousness and have this evolving experience. And it's just, it's amazing to think that Earth has created a, you know, this product, this plant, psilocybin, that lets you think about everything in a different way and create spirituality. I was just listening to Ellen Watts talk about this, you know, his experience and how amazing it is that these opportunities are right there in front of us. And Michael Pollan brings that to bear in his book, that he teaches the neuroscience. He talks about, you know, the legality and the safety, the propaganda that happened, the changes in culture as a result of the early shifts with Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert and the Harvard Psychedelics Club and all of the evolution of the third wave of psychedelics over the last 50, 60 years. And now we're in this storm charge moving forward using these medicines to heal. It's this whole other purpose.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. We're right in the middle of it. Michael Pollan has everything to do with where we're at, surging it forward.
Dr. Gandhi, unfortunately, we are almost out of time. Promise me that you'll come back on the program, because Lauren and I could speak to you for hours.
That would be lovely. And I just hope people will come out or at least look at the website for future opportunities to learn, because we'll be doing a lot of integration circles, community education.
Mm-hmm.
We're a community member now.
Right. So, neuropsychologist Dr. Parth Gandhi, who will be one of the speakers. There's a number of speakers. It's a really good agenda at the Intermountain Psychedelic Science and Therapy Symposium, January 17th and 18th, this weekend in Salt Lake City. Dr. Gandhi, thanks so much for being on Cool Science Radio.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio. If you missed part of the show or you want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab.
We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows wherever you find your podcasts, so you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name.
So look for KPCW Cool Science Radio and take us with you on your next...